Hi, listeners. This is a quick thank you for listening and for your ongoing support. If you're enjoying the program, please consider clicking the follow or subscribe button if you haven't done so already. It really helps us out. There's no better way to support us than doing that or sharing the show with a friend, colleague, family member, or any new or expecting parent in your life. It's totally appreciated. On with the show. Hi, I'm Sarah Trott, and welcome to the Fourth Trimester Podcast. I'm a new mama, and this podcast is all about postpartum care for the first few months following birth, the time period also known as the fourth trimester. My postpartum doula, Esther Gallagher, is my co-host. She's a mother, grandmother, perinatal educator, birth and postpartum care provider. Fourth trimester care, our topic, is about the practical, emotional, and social support parents and baby require. And importantly, it helps set the tone for the continuing journey of parenting.
Hello, and welcome back to the Fourth Trimester Podcast. My name is Sarah Trott, and I'm here with my co-host, Esther Gallagher. And we want to remind you that we have a website, fourthtrimesterpodcast.com, that you can go to sign up for our newsletter or become a patron, which is a sponsor of our program. And today we have a special guest. She is the founder of a project we're excited about called the Midriff Movement. Her name is Angie Sarand. She is a mama of four. So that's Woo-hoo! Kind of amazing. in and of itself, I have so much respect for that. And she's also a birth and postpartum doula and a lactation counselor, and she hails from Minneapolis. So welcome, Angie.
Thank you. It's actually, my last name is Sunroad. And we actually combined our last names. So when I met my partner, we had two different last names and we were like, well, who should take whose? And we just said, screw it. And we made up one new one.
Excellent. I love that.
Well, and someone pointed out to me, mine was Roeder and he was Peterson. And someone years later said, so you lost an R and he lost a whole Peter. And I said, yeah, I really like that. So we went with it.
Oh my gosh, that's just so good. Yes. Wow, that's a perfect segue into talking about the body.
Yes, it is.
Angie, I'm going to hand it over to you to just kind of talk about your project and what you're doing.
Sure. So I have been, I've been a mom for 13 years. Well, I guess my oldest is 13. So pregnant or birthing or lactating for 14 years. Yeah, I did lactate for 12 years and that straight. And I felt like that was something I needed a cape for. And I've been working with, women and families for the last better part of a decade doing birth and postpartum work. I also am a La Leche League leader and I work at a pre and postnatal yoga studio with a lot of postpartum moms and their babies. Nice. And one of the things that I noticed was a lot of the moms were always covering up their bodies and hiding. And so I wrote a blog piece about it, basically saying you should love your postpartum body. And the response to that was kind of like I said something no one said before. And I fully recognize many people have come before me on this path, but I don't think there's been as much press about it. There are a lot of photo projects out there, but as far as essays and taking it a little further, I kind of sat there and thought, well, what can I do with this if I've got this voice that I like to use? So my very supportive husband, who is a teacher, of course, was like, how can
a
we bring this? Yes. It's like, how can we bring this to the masses? And so we decided to create a film because the way that you change people's minds is representation. And as much as there are amazing, amazing photo projects out there, the Fourth Trimester Project, the Honest Body Project, Beautiful Body Project, just, you know, the Shape of a Mother, mm-hmm. none of them had ever been on film in a documentary. And perhaps it was naivety, perhaps it was lack of sleep, taking care of the kids, but we thought, if not someone else, why not us? So that was about a year and a half ago, and we've become a nonprofit, and our mission statement is essentially that we want to use media, art, community outreach, and film to change the conversation surrounding postpartum body image in our culture.
Excellent.
Yeah.
No small thing.
No. And to be totally honest, we knew what we were getting into, but I think the second we started it, we realized we're opening up this essentially a Pandora's box of topics that could just keep going forever, including the lack of postpartum support, our abysmal mortality rate for, you know, mothers and infants, all of these things. Sexuality, that's become my new favorite thing, is postpartum sexuality and how nobody talks about the fact that, you know, you can still be sexual and have children.
Mm-hmm. Surprise. Surprise. That's how you get more children.
Yes. Oh, is that how I had four? That might explain something here. So,
yeah. Oh, so I don't know if you've seen, I happen to have one in the town where my daughter is raising her son. They have a little, prenatal and postpartum shop, the name of which I'm not remembering at the moment.
That's okay.
But I walked in and they had these tank tops that said, "I make milk. What's your superpower?"
I
think you should get one of those.
I have seen those and I love it. Very much believe, I mean, honestly, if I wasn't making a film about this, it would probably be about how amazing and spectacular breast milk is, because I start talking about that and then I can't shut up because it's kind of phenomenal.
So have you listened to our podcast with Kimberly Allers-Seal?
No. Is that one I need to look
up?
Okay.
So she just wrote a book called The Big Letdown.
I've heard of it.
How medicine, big business, and feminism undermines breastfeeding. And she's got community-based projects in Chicago and Detroit to help Black women breastfeed and to improve the neonatal outcomes, mother and baby, around survival.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not just whether or not they breastfeed, but you know, helping moms and babies survive. So
it's preventative healthcare.
Yeah.
And it's really shocking to me how very little we support mothers of any kind. And I think that it's all related. I really do.
It is. Of course it is. Yeah. So come back around to this body project work that you're doing. It's pretty, we're so excited about it.
Well, thank you.
I'm just so glad that people are doing these kinds of things.
What's your hope for the impact for the project?
That is a great question.
Sarah always has the greatest questions.
Well, to be honest with you, I think in the beginning, our plan was, okay, we'll make this film. We'll have a great time doing it. I love talking to people. I love meeting people, and human interaction is like what I live for. I'm an extreme extrovert. And so I really thought, well, we'll make this film and then just see where it takes us. And while that is true, what we really decided and discovered quickly and why we called it a movement is that it's so much more than a film. It's so much more than going out there and saying, hey, mamas, love your body. We need to help them understand why we are feeling this way, where it comes from, change that language, and then also help women develop tools to change how they're feeling. You know, you don't just say to a depressed person, hey, get happy. And there are a lot
of people do.
They do. And there are a lot of really well-meaning body positivity leaders and projects that do say, love your body, but don't provide any tangible steps. So mm-hmm. every project we do, every event we do, we really try to have that in our mind. How can we use this as a platform? How can we make this into an action item? So what we're honestly considering now is maybe a docuseries. Because so many different topics, subtopics have emerged that, I mean, we have enough footage right now. We could make a film tomorrow, but we are, we're actually leaving in a month for a Southeast Asia and Australia tour to interview moms there to see what their cultural norms are. Yeah. Cause we really want to show not just the Western side of things, but all over. Oh, if we had the money, which is a very big if, we would be traveling all over the world, and we have talked to people all over, but yeah. So if it gets picked up, if we get funded, anyone out there working for a film distribution company, we could easily make this into a several part docuseries. And I just want women to know, I think it's very naive to say that someone will see someone who looks just like them, because no one looks just like you. But I want them to see that the term normal is broader than any of us can imagine.
Yeah. You said something earlier about, people saying to women, so love your body. Mm-hmm. And then women saying, okay, how? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you have ideas for practical steps towards that. Would you be interested in sharing those now?
Sure. I don't know that I have anything prepared as like a lesson, but yeah. Sure. One of the main things that I have really found that's really important, a simple one, is to stop that negative self-talk when you have it and really notice it. I think lots of us have that inner monologue constantly going, and it's saying, oh, maybe not this shirt. It shows off my belly. Or should I wear those pants? I don't know about that. And really thinking about, where is that coming from? And why am I even concerned about that? And, you know, I want you to wear the clothes that you feel good in, not because you think it makes you look better. And I'm a huge fan of reframing things. So when I think to myself, oh my God, look at my belly. I really take a minute to step back and think about, why does it look the way that it does? I have carried, birthed, and then literally carried around on my body for humans. Mm-hmm. And really understanding, I have some diastasis where my muscle separated. I also have a hernia. I've earned this body. This body was not something that was handed to me. And we went through infertility issues. So I really feel like I need to earn this body, and I need to recognize that.
Yeah.
The other thing that I encourage women to do is to show their body to their friends. I love women getting together and showing each other the things they're terrified to show anybody. I recently went bra shopping with two mama friends, and it was so damn empowering to stand in that changing room. And, you know, this mama friend was like, oh, I feel really nervous about this. And I'm like, that's like your best asset, you know? And then I pointed out what I'm nervous about, and they're like, no, that's amazing. And all those fears we have, the more you voice them, the smaller they become.
I think so much of our negative self-talk is, you know, it's internalized from the talk that we've gotten from actual people in our lives and the larger culture about how you're supposed to look, you know, what's attractive, what's not attractive, blah, blah, blah. Think the fact that you're pointing to just a kind of both interpersonal and internal, you know, because you did this with friends, right? but that mm-hmm. interpersonal and deep inner work of having the intervention that says, I'm going to try to witness for myself. I'm going to develop through practice a witness for myself, my inner witness that notices when I am doing the social body critic.
It's personal accountability.
In the positive sense.
And I think,
For so many of us, the first part is having a little compassion, right? And not
absolutely.
Because I think that if the critic gets to jump in first, that sets us up feeling bad. And so then if we can say, oh, I feel bad because I hurt my feelings, you know? And now I want to avoid that constant cycle of hurting my own feelings about the body I have and the body that I could learn to love. It's challenging. When I was pregnant with my daughter, her dad said to me during our pregnancy, you know, if you get fat, I'll leave you. How's that for direct, right?
I'm so sorry.
Now, I had never heard that kind of talk. In my family, you know, there was plenty of criticism, but it never was body shaming criticism. Mm-hmm. And so to have it be that direct was really kind of both like, you know, unbalancing, like really disruptive. And at the same time, like a good part of me was like, where the hell is that coming from? And why should I care? Mm-hmm. So being, you know, a young but sort of smart girl, the next time I went to see my midwife, I said to her, well, you know, there's concern about what my body is going to be like on the other side of this. And I went exactly to the right mm-hmm. woman because she said to me in a not a pandering way at all. She said, well, you know, you're going from being a teenager to being a woman, and you're not going to have a teenager's body anymore. You're going to have the body of a woman. And I just loved that. She was just as direct, you know, and just as clear. And I thought, okay, well, he can leave me. And if he doesn't leave me, I'll probably leave him.
And what ended up happening?
We left each other. Yeah. But not over that per se. But even so, you know, the fact that I was carrying around that this is his attitudinal stance towards women and their bodies didn't help his case much. Let me just say.
Well, we have such an interesting, I don't even know how I want to phrase it, but we've come as a society to accept that when a woman is pregnant and all the time surrounding it, that perinatal time, it's okay to talk openly about her body, to touch it, to discuss it, to say how big or small or whatever. And it's fascinating to me that we've just made this a cultural norm. And I think that there are so very many women that don't even know it's okay for them to say, hey, this is my body. Mm-hmm. I don't really need your opinion of me.
Yeah. As my daughter says, get off of me.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. Very much
physically
so.
Physically and social emotionally. Like, this is mine. Get off of me.
I mean, regardless of pregnancy or having babies, I think that a lot of people have a hard time loving their bodies anyway.
Absolutely. Right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, if you have 18 to 35 years of, mm-hmm. gee, what do I do with this thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, going through this phenomenal transformative process that's ongoing our whole lives anyway, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But it doesn't, it does nothing to help us mentally and emotionally.
So anyone not feeling that great about their bodies in the first place, then having a baby and, I mean, there's so many issues there. So a lot of people think like, oh, I'm going to, you know, my definition of success, you know, as far as other people are concerned, is going to be that I quote unquote bounce back and my body goes back to what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So it's never, First of all, that's a huge misconception. It's never going to go back. There's no going back. There's only through.
Absolutely. Well, body after baby is definitely one of those phrases that I would really like to eradicate, because it insinuates that you're going to be someone or something different. And yes, we are. We're changing, but we're the same people with the same body. It's a body that's going to evolve. It's a body that's going to support. It's a body that's going to change. But to the phrasing and the words that we use take away from that power, and they make it seem as if it's an attainable goal that we all should have to get back to what we were.
And stay that way for our whole lives.
Absolutely. And to be honest, I don't really want to be that person I was.
Yeah.
You know, I think that somebody said to me probably 10, 15 years ago, someone said to me, you know, moms are supposed to be squishy. And that's really stayed with me. But a huge part of this, when we were talking earlier about body image issues, not just being around pregnancy, women are told essentially from birth that we need to be something other than we are, smaller, thinner, bigger, louder, quieter, whatever it is. And that continues our entire lives. And we have talked with women who have had eating disorder issues, who've had sexual trauma that has led to body hatred, and, you know, so on and so forth. And so when then they have babies, these things crop up and grow into these enormous beasts that are almost too much to handle.
Mm-hmm. Well, and these things can lurk and kind of rear their ugly heads at any time in a woman's
Absolutely.
Life. I just want to speak to that because I've struggled with all those things you just mentioned and, you know, was going along fine. And then suddenly I just took a left turn, you know, into this deep abyss of like, thinking I should be something different. And it didn't take much of a trigger. I mean, I realized the triggers were large and in my face. And on the other hand, the other side of the perspective on this is always, why did that throw me so easily? You know, so there's a lot for some of us, for most of us, actually, when you consider that you named, you know, sexual assault and molestation, for instance, like if that's one in three of all women in America, that's a lot of us.
Yes.
And not to pull this
to a political side, but in our current political climate, I wonder how that number is going to change when we have a president who is saying that it's absolutely okay to treat women however we would like, and then also to rate them on a scale of 1 to 10 and pass he hasn't passed legislation yet, he's working on it, but to make requirements for how they should look and be. I just feel like all of this work that we've been doing, we cannot stop. And that might be why I'm feeling so fueled lately, because we are in the middle of misogyny. We are in the middle of a patriarchy that is feeling emboldened and is making me sick, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, trigger warning, right?
Yes.
Well, and you know, it's not just the administration, all white male.
Oh gosh.
But you know, let's go a little deeper and further. When our Congress is primarily white men, some of them who I adore.
Absolutely.
I can think of two.
I live in Al Franken territory, and he's amazing.
Oh, you.
I got to shake his hand at the Gay Pride Parade.
Oh, my God. And he's funny.
He's hilarious.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. But, you know, like I say, like, we, you know, racism and sexism have been part of the fabric of our nation since the beginning. And we've got a lot of work to do.
Hell yes.
You know?
Well, it's interesting because people will say, they'll hear what my project's about and they hear body image. And I think what they think, I worry what they think is that it's a very surface level me saying it's okay that I'm kind of pudgy. And to be clear, I tell people all the time, part of this belly is donuts and I will never stop eating donuts. And I love donuts and that's okay with me. But what it's really about is so much bigger than anything I could put into words eloquently. And all of these factors play into this. I had a conversation today with a mama who is from Eritrea and another woman who his family is from Cameroon. And we were talking about how in their culture, if you lose any weight postpartum, it is not good. You are supposed to bulk up so that you can feed and carry that baby. And she was saying, one of the moms was saying that she actually, her family members will feed her, like hand into her mouth, feed her if she's not eating enough. And I was thinking of how different our culture is here, where one, we don't even get any maternity leave so that you can take care of your body. Speaking of all the things we could talk about. But when you are home, I was lucky to get like a handful of nuts in between taking care of kids, soaking my bottom, resting, breastfeeding, you know, no one was spoon feeding me anything unless I was barking at Mike to do that, which then he did.
Right. And nobody had taught Mike that, you know, if he's a father, his primary role is to have you survive so that your children do.
Yep.
Right. And that's not faulting Mike.
No.
That's faulting patriarchy and a longstanding, you know, woman hating system.
Well, where we see this most, we're doing this project together, the two of us together. He took a sabbatical this year. It's been amazing. I've taken birth clients. I'm also a realtor. So I've also been doing that. And, this week alone, 3 babies, 2 houses and a 3rd house tonight. So I'm just saying it's been a week, but anyways, it's interesting how many people say, oh, that's phenomenal that he took a year off to work on this project. Like he's rewriting history books. And, you know, he took the kids to a museum this week, R4 and then 2 extras. And I was at a birth, so I wasn't there. And when he was checking in, the person behind the counter said, you know, how many? And he said, 1 adult and 6 kids. And the man did a double take, looked up at him and said, best of luck. And that never happens to me. I am out with my kids alone all the damn time. Right. And I don't get accolades. If anything, I maybe get dirty looks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we have this, we have the lowest standards for men in this country that if you show up, your job is done.
Yeah. Right. My dad used to take 4 of us camping.
Yes.
Including, you know, a very little one. Like, he just leave mom at home and because, you know, she needed a break and she was in college and he took us all camping and we all took care of ourselves.
As you should.
Yeah.
Well, and not to go on a little bit more about Mike, but we went to the West Coast to film. And while we were there, my cousin was killed in a car accident. And so I flew home for the funeral and he drove my 4 kids home alone from LA to Minneapolis. And, you know, it's not like I was here at a spa. It wasn't exactly fun, but I do have to remind myself that, you know, I probably did a pretty good job picking a partner there.
Yeah. Good work.
Yeah. Fantastic.
And by the way, he's dreamy. I know that this is a podcast, but trust me all, he's delightful to look at.
Sarah's not jumping in here, but she got pretty lucky too. They don't have 4 kids yet.
But there's time.
There is time. Yeah. And Ben is dear, and he wanted to feed Sarah, which is so great. He was cooking and feeding, and yeah, it was a joy to work with their family when Abby was born.
It's true. I do have a hottie myself who's also very much an equal player and equal partner. And I actually hope for all women that they find, you know, someone who can step up and be an equal partner. They don't necessarily have to cook or clean or take care of the kids, but whatever equality means in terms of sharing responsibilities and what people are comfortable with. Mm-hmm. Like I really think that there's a shift in expectations that can happen mm-hmm. for women.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that we need to start teaching our daughters to expect that. And I think we need to start teaching our sons to also expect that. One of the things that's been fascinating to me in doing this project is so many people have said to me, oh, you must be doing this for your daughter. I have one daughter and three sons. And I look at them and I say, yes, but equally as much for my sons, because this is not an issue just for us women here to fix. We're looking at all mm-hmm. of you. And I feel the same way about expectations for your partner. It's not luck or happenstance that Mike participates in parenting as much as he does. It was expected and discussed and agreed upon because we wanted to mm-hmm. go into this together. And one of the things that I tell the families that I work with is I love, if the mama is breastfeeding, I love the import and export law. If she is spending all that time importing milk into your baby, then your partner is dealing with all the exporting, which means the diapers and the burping and the putting them back to bed and whatever that might be. And once I discovered that, my life was very different. And there was a lot less resentment at 2 a.m. when I was feeding the baby and staring at Mike sleeping, who would have happily gotten up but slept through the baby crying because he doesn't have the same connection, you know, that we do as birthing partners. And once I woke him, all right, it's time for you to do the burping and the changing, things shifted between us. And he learned mm-hmm. the nuances of our baby. And he wasn't as nervous about being left alone with them. And I had slightly more freedom. I was still breastfeeding a lot.
Hi, listeners. I have some exciting news to share with you today. We've partnered with Every Mother, your go-to destination for evidence-based exercise therapy regimens. Whether you're dealing with diastasis recti, preparing for birth, or navigating postpartum recovery, Every Mother has your back. With personalized daily routines tailored to your core and pelvic floor needs, they're here to support you every step of the way. Say hello to a stronger, healthier you with Every Mother. Visit their website today and use code FOURTHTRIMESTER10 for 10% off your personalized regimen. That's fourth spelled out, FOURTH, trimester10 for 10% off, because every mother deserves the very best.
I think that this points to not only the pragmatics of learning and teaching and supporting, you know, children of any gender orientation, that parenting is a full-time, full-on, everybody included endeavor. And what part of that means is that you're not left out, you're not excluded from the experience, you know, the full experience, whatever it is, much of it positive.
Absolutely.
You know, because somebody's saying, well, you don't know how, or you don't have the capacity, or you don't have the hormones or some damn thing, you know? You're not included in this.
Well, obviously, right? This is how you can tell that you have not met Mike or I, because if one of us is going to cry over something, it's going to be Mike. So, and I think it's so fascinating to me how we just have come to this point where gender roles, every time I think we've made leaps and bounds, somebody says something that just amazes me. And really specifically to our children in this project, we just get so many comments about, well, what does your daughter think about it? I'm like, yeah, that's great. But there's three other kids here. And it's funny. A lot of people think, that I was the driving force behind this project. But quite frankly, a huge portion of this was Mike saying, yes, let's do this. We need to go forward with it. And to bring it back to how can partners help, you know, in helping moms feel positive about their bodies, I think so much of my journey has been being able to share things with him without judgment, in full honesty, with the understanding that it is a journey and that how I'm feeling today might not be how I was feeling yesterday or how I'm feeling tomorrow. And to have conversations about my body in ways that were safe and supported. So it wouldn't have helped me if he had said, oh, of course I love your body. Nothing's changed, because I would have called bullshit on that in a heartbeat. What helped me is when he said, you know, well, of course, yeah, your stomach has changed and you've gotten curvier, but I like those curves. And, you know, when we're being intimate, I don't really notice your stomach. I'm looking at your boobs, which P.S. are still quite perky and lovely. So that was really helpful.
Who wouldn't want to have that conversation?
No, and this is, you know, when we do these events and when we talk about intimacy, that's a big thing I say is, you know, have these conversations with your partner and say what it is you are insecure about, because 9 times out of 10, your partner's going to say, I've never even noticed that. Or, yes, I've noticed, mm-hmm. but I don't really care because I find you really hot. Mm-hmm. And when you go through parenthood, right. when you go through this journey with somebody, that emotional connection can grow in such beautiful ways. And I didn't expect mm-hmm. that. I really didn't expect that, that being such a beautiful byproduct of parenting in my experience.
I completely agree. I think the experience brings people so much closer together and has the effect of, I think maybe putting to one side some of the unrealistic ideas that society might surround us with about body image. And the body image stuff is sort of reflective of everything we're talking about, right? Of equality and respect. Yeah. Women don't talk about men's bodies.
Oh my God, no.
I mean, there's just a huge diverse. And also I think just going back to what you said before about this idea of, I think we said this woman from Ethiopia was saying like, oh, if I lose weight, that's bad. Well, my heart really goes out to all the babies of all the mommies and all the mommies and their families too, who are trying to get their baby weight off so desperately. They're actually, I mean, maybe in some extreme cases, harming their babies, but they're not doing their babies a service by doing that. Mm-hmm. And it's so odd to me because the message in the hospital is so clearly, well, if you want what's best for the baby, then you'll do X, Y, and Z, with X, Y, and Z often not being what's ideal for mom in the birth process. So like that same excuse is like totally ignored.
Absolutely.
In the postpartum period. So like, okay, you do what's right for the baby, but that's just an excuse to kind of do what the hospital wants you to do. Then you get out of the hospital and no one says do what's best for the baby. They say do what's best for someone who's looking at you. Mm-hmm. Make sure you look good, which is such a weird.
Well, and who do we owe that to? I mean, who am I looking good for?
How do we define looking good?
It's abstract.
You know, there's so much shame in
the paparazzi.
You know, all the time. Oh, yeah. I had to actually ditch them to do this. So I don't know how much time I got left before somebody breaks down my door.
Yeah. And if the best thing for a baby is to put on a little bit of weight to help your milk come in or just help your body heal itself and get all the nutrients it needs because you've lost a ton of blood or whatever it is, that's really typical. Yeah. Like, I just think that, you know, people need to start thinking about that message, like what's best for the baby after the baby's born in your body, not just like in the hospital, which, by the way, I encourage you to.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and I think that we also need to question that we are making judgments on health based on a woman's appearance. And that's another thing that I struggle with myself when I go visit families postpartum and I say to them, I'm like, you look great. What I mean is you look amazingly settling into this motherhood experience and not, oh, you look amazing in those sweatpants and your hair looks fantastic. We don't have in our society a language surrounding motherhood that supports these ideals that are best practice for mom and baby. We are lacking that. We don't have expectations that celebrate if you do stay in bed and breastfeed and really care for yourself. It's this fine line of women having to prove, oh, I'm not being lazy, I'm healing, and also trying to get back to their lives, because our lives don't stop. Our culture doesn't allow that. You're supposed to have a baby and snap back and show up to your yoga class next week. And I want to be clear too. I'm not here to judge those women who do want to go to their yoga class next week or who do end up losing weight after they deliver, because I don't. One thing within this project we've been very intentional with is not using the term normal or real. A lot of campaigns will say things like, this is what a real mother looks like. And I don't want to exclude anyone. A real mom is anybody who has a child. End of story. That's it. Whether they adopted, whether they step parent, whatever, that's what we're going to define as a mom. And I think that we are so quick to put specifically mothers into categories, you know, home or hospital birth, vaginal or cesarean, breast or bottle, whatever it is. We also do that category of got her body back, didn't. And it's damaging, and it's creating these mommy wars that have really gotten out of control.
Let's talk about, if you don't mind and if you can, like a little bit of the physiology of the the transformation between pregnancy and postpartum and continuing motherhood in all its shapes and sizes and wonderment. I'm thinking along the lines of, you know, just being able to be fertile requires that we have a certain percentage of body.
Absolutely.
Women don't understand that. Like, and yet ancient cultures do. When I was studying anthropology way back when, you know, your rite of passage as a young girl into womanhood included getting fed special foods, chief among them high fat foods, oils, and things of that nature, in order to turn you into somebody who is going to be able to sustain yourself. And
well, is it Venus of Willendorf, that statue, that the rotund mama?
The little.
I remember seeing that when I was probably 17. And didn't look like that. I was a very late bloomer. Mm-hmm. I pretty much went from an A to a D cup in a summer when I was probably 16. And then my hips came. And that was also a whole shocking thing for me. But when seeing that statue and knowing that motherhood was my goal, really kind of that moment of, okay, so being a mom is not just about having kids, but accepting what comes with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's just the kind of animal we are is made in general to put whatever extra we are lucky enough to get around the middle. And keep it handy for breastfeeding and all those sorts of things. I mean, there's a reason why our bodies change the ways in which they do. And it's a positive reason. You know, I mean, I hope that we're not encouraging moms to, you know, drink soda and eat sugar during their pregnancies, because that's just dangerous. But to stay well and fully nourished by way of preparing to be postpartum and for breastfeeding and for baby care. think it's pretty
important. Oh, absolutely. And as I said before, you know, that was one of the hardest things for me was finding time and energy to eat real meals. And one of the things that I really love right now that I'm seeing in our postpartum culture is the presence of meal trains and you know, food being set up to support the family when they have a baby, and recognizing that nourishment is key to health and healing and time to bond with your baby. Because yes, of course, I'd love you all to be eating wonderfully prepared foods, but you probably don't have the time to do that if you're sitting and bonding right. with your baby.
Yeah. And that's not just, right, that's not just for a week or so, right? That's that.
Absolutely not.
That transition from birth through the postpartum period, it goes on, you know, it takes a while. And that's why we need people around us doing those things that we're not available to do for ourselves if we're taking care of a baby. So.
And I think it sometimes gets harder. I mean, my youngest will be 5 in May. And if anyone wants to drop by a meal, I will happily take it. Because there's so much going on in our lives that it's hard to prioritizing yourself is really difficult.
Oh, I think I will forever be the kind of cook and mom who's got frozen food, you know, casseroles and things and soups in my freezer so that at least once or twice a week, I don't have to cook.
Right. Yeah.
I always cook in a large batch and have a lot left over so that I can have like a second meal out of it.
Even though my husband, I don't even have kids around anymore. Sorry to step on that, Sarah, but you know.
And I have always wanted to be that mom and I'm just not there yet. Yeah. Give me some time.
Whatever works.
Yeah.
Well, all right. So where can people see your documentary or find out information about what you're doing?
So we have a website, www. Or is that assumed? midriftmovement.com. And now the midriff, I mean, it's a playoff, the term midriff where your belly shows under a shirt. But it also is very intentionally to recognize that we've sort of drifted away from celebrating these changes that come with our bodies. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting how many things are mistagged on Facebook or on Instagram or social media with midriff when they mean midriff. And I think it's really hilarious what pops up in my feed that people think I'll be interested in. So they can go there. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. And we will be releasing a lot of little mini videos along the way. We'll be documenting our trip. As I said, we go to Southeast Asia and Australia in April and May. And one thing I'm really excited about, we are working with a local poet here who has made a spoken word piece for us about what it feels like to be a mother. And we're having other moms record some of the background inner dialogue that mothers hear. And we got a really amazing song that we're putting it to. And so we're hoping to have that out within the month here. We'll see how that goes. We also have a coloring book that we created that illustrates postpartum bodies. And we tried to make it as inclusive as we could. We could really make about 700 coloring books. But it's designed to be done with your child. It's tongue in cheek, but it's also to the point. There's activities in it. You can go through our stretch mark maze.
Brilliant.
And there really is a stretch mark maze, and there's a word search and all kinds of fun things.
Cool. Oh my gosh.
I mean, I hope this is the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, mamas, look down at your pregnant belly. Think about all that love and excitement that you have and imagine that belly after your baby's gone and still give it all of that love and excitement because your body is a temple and it's performing a miracle.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think if we can say that to our friends, so earlier when I said I don't like that we talk about bodies, that's true. But I also think that to counteract all the negativity, if we intentionally say things, I try to point out to my friends if I know she has a quote to her problem area, I'll say things like, you know, I love your hips, or show me your belly and I'll show you mine. I do a lot of that. My belly for me is my, I don't want to say it's my trouble spot, but it's the spot that I struggle with loving the most. And so the way that I have chosen to deal with that is I show it off pretty much whenever I can. And every person we've interviewed, at the end of our interview, I ask them to show me their belly. And so I have a bunch of side-by-side shots of me belly to belly with all of these people we've interviewed. And at the end of the film, we're going to have this piece of all these bellies nice. Lined up. Our goal too, when this film is done, which will probably be, I would say 2018, you could see something, is we want to host showings where we show the film and then we show each other our bodies. So invite me over. Excellent. I'll come to your house. I'll show you my body. It doesn't take much.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I'll start doing that as well. Not that I haven't in the past, but
I love it.
With those clients who are prepared for it, I definitely do some showing.
Yeah. And it's cathartic.
It is. It is. Thank you so much for being on our program.
Yeah.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Lovely.
Okay. We're going to post all of the information about your project on our website so people can to learn more about what you're doing. And we're very excited to see your documentary.
Thank you. I'm excited to have people watch it.
Thanks so much, Angie. This was really lovely.
It was for me as well.
Okay. Bye. Till next
time. Bye. Take care.
You can find out more about Esther Gallagher on esthergallagher.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast in order to hear more from us. Thank you for listening, everyone, and I hope you'll join us next time on the fourth trimester. The theme music on this podcast was created by Sean Trott. Hear more at soundcloud.com/Sean Trott. Special thanks to my true loves, my husband Ben, daughter Penelope, and baby girl Evelyn. Don't forget to share the fourth trimester podcast with any new and expecting parents. I'm Sarah Trott. Goodbye for now.
Hello again, Bicycle Man. I know you're doing all that you can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I'll sing a song for you. You got your wheels, you got your gears. You ride around town without any fear. You got your pedals, you got your brakes. You always wear your helmet for safety's sake. Hello again, Bicycle Man. I know you're doing all that you can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I sing a song for you. Hello again, Bicycle Man. I know you're doing the best that you can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I sing a song for you.